You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Long before Interstate 95 or Amtrak's Northeast Corridor, there was one route that connected New York City and Boston, stretching like a lasso from Manhattan with its knot landing in New Haven. The Boston Post Road looped around southern New England. Eric Jaffe traces the history of the Post Road from its roots as a Pequot Indian trail to the heavily trafficked road that made Congress recognize there was a need for an interstate highway system in his book, The King's Best Highway. It's published by Scribner. We're very pleased that Eric Jaffe could join us today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
Now, the road doesn't follow a straight line. Why?
Well, not at all. It doesn't do that because it began as this system of trails that the Native Americans had kind of blazed through the wilderness to get to various points. It followed the contours of the earth a lot. It ran alongside rivers a lot, so you could make long-distance travels and still get food and refreshment. And so as we began to commandeer this native trail, we used most of those curves as well.
And can you describe the path of the contemporary Post Road for us?
Sure. It does look a lot like a lasso if you're looking at the Northeast. It begins at the bottom of Manhattan. No longer.
And you say it begins in Manhattan? It's because some people say it begins in Boston.
That's true. It depends on who you talk to. Since we're in Manhattan, I'll say it begins in Manhattan.
So is Broadway is the bottom leg?
It would have began right at the fort at the where the Custom House is today, the very southern tip of Manhattan, would have gone up Broadway as we know it today, and then cut across Park Row, gone up Bowery, and then right about at Madison Square Park today, it would have continued to zigzag up the east side. It no longer does that after 1807 when the street commissioners of New York decided to give us the grid we know and or love today. That did away with the Post Road on the east side, but then it continues up the island as St. Nicholas Avenue. And toward the Bronx a little bit as Broadway at the top as well.
Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a Boston Post Road from then on.
Pretty much. It hugs the coast of Long Island Sound more or less as U.S. Route 1.
We think of the Post Road as the artery linking interior New England to Boston, but wasn't the trail initially considered forbidding wilderness?
Oh, absolutely. It was terrifying at first. This was a trail nobody wanted to go on. There were people that would get lost for days, and once you were lost, there was little way you could find your way back.
You couldn't just follow the path?
No. The path was at times maybe a foot and a half wide, and if it snowed, think about it, there was no course to follow.
Who is John Oldham? Is it accurate to describe him as an explorer?
John Oldham was one of the early colonists in Massachusetts. He, I guess you could say, he certainly had a desire to explore. He was really a trader. He wanted to trade with the Indians. The Indians had come to Boston to meet with Governor John Winthrop of Massachusetts and asked him to trade with them in the Connecticut Valley. Winthrop refused, but Oldham decided he would try this out. And in doing so, he followed what became the Boston Post Road and traded with the Indians and kind of led civilization westward from Boston.
And the Indians eventually killed him.
And the Indians eventually returned the favor by killing him, although that's a little, there's debate as to exactly why he was killed.
Now, John Winthrop, writing in his journal, referred to the route as the ordinary way. What did he mean by that?
I think what he means is by the time he wrote that, Oldham had gone on his route for several years. There had been trading back and forth, and the way people were getting into Connecticut to get toward the Connecticut River, trade with the Indians, look for natural resources, was this wilderness path. And I guess by the time Winthrop wrote that, it had been used so often that it became the ordinary way.
Was this the only one in the colonies at the time? I would assume that Indians had created other paths in other parts of the
Certainly. It was not the only trail in all of America and all of New England, but it was quickly became the primary trail because as colonists began to follow this, they would settle along it. They would build their meeting houses, their churches, their important buildings. And when it was time for the town, when the town was swelled toward its peak population, they would travel the road and kind of continue to dot the trail, and so it kind of had to become the main highway.
What are some of the towns that grew out of that?
Well, you go west from Boston, you have Roxbury, Watertown, and then you have Sudbury, Massachusetts, and there's a very interesting discussion in some of the records about how a man from Sudbury really needs to, they decide they need to start a new town. It's becoming swollen with the population, and so
they thought Boston was too crowded, and then they thought Sudbury was
exactly.
too crowded?
Exactly. What's really interesting in the matter of, you know, only a couple decades, because they needed so much land for pasture, you could be crowded at what we would consider painfully small population.
And there were certain rules. Private homes were required to be within a certain distance of the town meeting houses.
In 1635, Massachusetts made that rule, and it was to kind of help knit this tight community that the Puritans really thought they were going to establish here.
Did these towns build additional roads off the trail, or did the trail serve as the main drag where everything was built along?
They eventually would build different roads off the trail leading to different places, but over time they... At the beginning, at least, they would call out every man in the town twice a year to just mend the road itself. It was enough of a chore just to take care of this one road. We didn't actually get good at building roads for centuries.
Now, you said that Boston started getting too crowded. That this is because there were still a lot of farmers there.
Exactly.
And this drive westward was always in search of farmland. New England is famous for its rocky soil.
Right.
Were they finding better stuff as they followed the trail?
The Connecticut River Valley was considered great soil for corn and other means of harvest, and it was along the river.
But that's far away from the Boston Post Road.
Well, no, the Boston Post Road would have led you west toward Hartford, and that's the upper route of the Post Road. And then you have the lower route that follows the coast of Connecticut.
Were they building bridges or using ferries across the water parts?
At first, it was ferries. For a long time, it was just ferries, and the ferries would waive the fee if you were an official postal carrier or someone who was working for the government, but everyone else had to pay a few pence for themselves and a few for their horse.
Well, at the beginning, as you say, that this trail was rather confusing and sometimes only a couple of feet wide. Mm. Did it start becoming marked? Were there ways that that travelers could find their way?
Sometimes travelers would mark trees, but it doesn't really start becoming marked in an almost official sense until Ben Franklin establishes the milestones that were going to go along the post road and help post riders calculate postage rates.
So it is Ben Franklin
once again
playing a major role in something that in the development of this country. The man must have been amazing.
You wonder if he ever had any free time.
He fooled around a lot, I gather, on the side. And you mentioned mail.
Mm-hmm.
So how soon did people realize that this would be a good way to deliver mail rather than using ships?
Well, it's in 1673 that the colonial governor of New York, whose name was Francis Lovelace, decided, this is it. We need a postal system. We need an official system between New York and Boston. We need this for communication, of course, but we also needed to ensure defenses. The Dutch were always on the lookout for a Dutch attack. We also needed to stimulate the economy. This is a great way to send a rider with news of what we have here in New York toward Boston. What do they need? And so he worked primarily with the governor of Connecticut, actually, John Winthrop Jr., son of the first Bay governor.
And we have people like Matthias Nichols coming along and delivering mail, but also acting as cops,
right.
as tour guides,
right.
and whatever else was necessary.
The first post rider's duties were extremely expansive, and they included, but certainly weren't limited to, apprehending fugitives that had left New York.
And some officials saw the route as an intelligence network. A way of warning about attacks from the Dutch? Were the Dutch attacking the English settlers in New England?
Lovelace's idea was that if we had a great system of communication, we could inform one another in a routine manner of the latest potential attacks. And the irony of this is that when he traveled to Hartford by land, which was very rare by then, from New York to discuss with Winthrop this postal system. And while he was there, the Dutch indeed invaded Manhattan. And that was the end of Mr. Lovelace.
My guest is Eric Jaffe. He's written a book called The King's Best Highway, The Lost History of the Boston Post Road, The Route That Made America. It's published by Scribner. Okay, The Ordinary Way, The King's Best Highway. How did it come to be known as the Boston Post Road? Is it because of this mail service?
Essentially, yes. If when you think about it, Boston Post Road isn't a name so much as a description. Where are you going? I'm going to Boston. What are you doing? I'm taking the mail, the post. How are you getting there? I'm taking a road, not by sea. So this was the description that eventually stuck as our name.
Did any of Franklin's milestones remain?
Sure. They remained, you know, more or less. Some of them are still there today. He didn't plant them personally, but he kind of laid out where they should be. And some of them still remain. Sometimes they get stolen by a young kid who doesn't quite know the significance of them, but there are often people in towns who will fight to preserve them.
Your subtitle says that it's the route that made America.
Right.
Because so many other things grew out of it. We've been talking about mail service and also the ability to have commerce go from mm-hmm. New York all the way up to Boston.
Sure.
But newspapers as well?
Newspapers as well. And when you got when you get into the Stamp Act in 1765, where the colonial patriots who wanted to overthrow that, they largely convened in these print shops that dotted the Boston Post Road. This was the way the messages dispersed throughout the Northeast. And in doing that, they united one another in opinion against the Stamp Act. So this was a major progression toward the rebellion. Later on, you have the Industrial Revolution really settles down primarily along the Boston Post Road. It had to do with textiles. And this was the best place to disperse, again, this manufacturing.
How long did it remain the prime link between New York and New England?
Sure. Mainly until the railroads enter the picture. Once railroads came into play, everything kind of changed the scope of our life and the speed of it.
So driving up the Boston Post Road now is kind of like driving down Route 66. It's more out of curiosity than convenience?
Driving up the Boston Post Road now from New York is a major chore. It's a burden. I did it, and I averaged a little less than 15 miles per hour all the way to New Haven.
Why so slow?
There are
one lane.
There are one lane at times. Traffic lights. It's crowded with commerce lining both sides, so there are people turning in and out at all times. And it has become basically a glorified local street. This used to be our main avenue from Boston to New York, but now it's really, if you live in one of the towns along the way, it's your main local avenue, but not a thoroughfare.
And it's one of those streets where you're driving down Main Street, and then there's a sign that says, tells you to go two blocks down to the left and then continue on the right.
Right.
When you're driving down it, do you see any clues of its original uses?
It's hard to these days. You kind of have to know what you're looking for. It was interesting. There are sometimes we lose a lot of the landmarks around it. There was the famous in Bridgeport, Connecticut, the Tom Thumb's house, Barnum's act Tom Thumb. His house was along the Boston Post Road, but it got wiped out so that we would have more room for a Walgreens parking lot. And so things like this happen unless the town itself is aware of it and tries to prevent them.
You're the former editor of Smithsonian Magazine's website. Is that where you became interested in this?
I actually became interested in it before that when I was at journalism school here in Manhattan. I was in the Bronx one day with my class. And there is a Boston Road in the Bronx still. It's very strange to see a Boston Road a mile from Yankee Stadium. And someone told me this isn't just the name of this road. This actually goes to Boston, and it was the first postal route. And my interest kind of grew from there because not being from the Northeast, I still know about the Oregon Trail, even though I don't have to go there. I still know about Route 66, even though I don't have to drive across the country. But I didn't know about the Boston Post Road until I got here, and that seemed wrong.
And this is the first of them.
The first of?
Of the major roads.
Oh, absolutely, exactly.
Eric Jaffe's The King's Best Highway, The Lost History of the Boston Post Road, The Route That Made America, is published by Scribner. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.